Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
All right, I am excited to be joined by Logan Workman, a pitcher in the Tampa Bay Rays organization. How's it going, brother?
Good. How are you?
Doing well. I can't complain. How was your off season? You mentioned that you're in Florida for vacation and stuff. Like, how has the off season been?
It's been good. With this being first full off season and after an affiliate season, it's new. But it's one of those where you kind of have to become the baseball player off season without coaches, where you're doing your own thing, trying to figure out the off season and you know, just kind of going day by day. But for me, I felt good. I felt great and ready to get things rolling towards spring training.
Yeah, no, for sure. All right. So I want to jump in and talk about the playoffs with you and the Bowling Green hot rods and stuff. So that's when I first heard about you, because I've had Vernon on, Reifert on, Witten on, Menendez on. So I was kind of tuned into that game because I knew a lot of guys on the team, and I was just watching like you just shove, absolutely just dominate. And I'm like, I gotta have this guy on. How cool was it to get like the first start in the postseason?
It was good. I started kind of like timing it up. You know, we kind of had like a set rotation each week and it just flowed in that way. And I started looking at it as to like, okay, you know, if it starts this day, am I going to throw? And then kind of got called into Smitty's office, our manager. And he was like, hey, you know, you're starting game one. And Molina was going to start game two. So he was like, all right, y'all be prepared. And it's like, okay. And for me, you know, every game is the same. Go out, mindset, finish out the game, finish out your outing, and then walk away. But postseason mindset's obviously a little different for everybody. And for me, it was just like, you know, I've had four bad outings at Rome. I mean, you go back through and look at my stat line from each game, and it's been brutal. I have not walked out of Rome alive, basically. So this was like, you know, the turning point that I needed at the end of the season to finish out on the right foot.
Yeah, no, for sure. So heading into the start, was it anything different? Because I know it's like, obviously it's a whole different level, the postseason and stuff like that. How did you get yourself like calm or hyped up or whatever it may be? Like, how'd you get yourself like focused for that?
We just knew that we were already in it from winning the first half. So going into it, we knew we were fine, and we had home field, and you know, obviously we don't want to lose, and you know, we ended up losing that game, but we knew that we were going to bounce back. But this was that one game that it was just like, I need to get over the hump. So I needed every possible ounce of energy, focus, everything. I just kind of built it into this one game. And with it being closer to home for me, it's only an hour and 45 minutes from Chattanooga, where I'm from. I had a lot of friends and family be able to show up, and old roommates from school.
Oh, cool.
And, so it kind of gave me a little bit extra boost. It's like, okay, I haven't had a single good outing against Rome. We're in the postseason. It's a whole different story.
Yeah. And like, let's get into your numbers, because like Rome, they couldn't touch you for the first five innings. You had, I think, 7 Ks, 5 shutout. At what point did you just realize like, I'm kind of carving right now?
Whenever I think I walked a guy, towards second or third inning.
Yeah.
Maybe second, third inning. And their next guy comes up and tries to lay down a bunt. And I just bounced off the mound and threw the guy out. And, at that point I was like, okay, it's going to be a very low scoring game. We're hitting somewhat okay. Our bats aren't alive, but we're hitting, we're putting the ball in play. they're striking us out. So it's like, what do I got to do? I got to hold us to, basically zero to keep, keep us going. So, I just kind of took it into my own hands and I was like, okay, this is, I'm not going to let this go. And they had me and said, we're kind of going to throw pitch count out the window. We're going to kind of throw innings out the window. We're going to give you at least, a max of seven if your pitch count allows it, but we're not going to throw you out for 100 pitches.
Yeah.
So I hit that pitch count around the fifth inning and I was just like, all right, let's just keep going.
Yeah. And I think you guys were having like a no hitter into the seventh inning, you and the other guys. As a pitcher, and you see someone bunt to break up a no hitter, because I think the first hit was a bunt. How annoying is that as a pitcher? Do you be like, oh, come on, guys, we're rolling here?
You look at it from both sides and go, well, okay, maybe you're going to try and start something here because we've been, getting no hit. Let's start something and bunt and get a guy on, break up the no hitter, just break up that entire mindset of that game, and be able to start fresh. But as a pitcher, you're kind of looking at it going, okay, you bunted, you might have, if this was a bigger, more looked at type of situation in the grand scheme of things, that, not unspoken rule, the next guy gets hit.
Yeah.
It just kind of puts it that way, but they needed something to get rolling and that was their way. And with it being playoffs, you don't want to risk anybody else getting on base.
Right,
so
right.
The next thing is to just attack the next guy. That's what Tony did. And we were able to get through it. It just kind of fell apart towards the end. And I think pitching kind of did their thing, but, it was, it's one of those you just don't like to see, but it's going to happen eventually.
Yeah, it is what it is. And let's talk about Tony, because like I said, I've had him on. Like, how nasty is he? Like, and I can say that probably about like Austin Vernon, Kyle Witt, and like all the guys like I've had on, like Humble Brag. I might be a Rays podcaster now, no big deal. But like, how nasty is just like that rotation in the bullpen that you guys have there? Because like, you guys are just lights out.
When you have a trusted bullpen as a starter, and can speak for Vern too, being half starter, half bullpen guy throughout the entire season. When you have guys like that come out of the pen, who day in and day out, you're going to get the same thing with an occasional hiccup, which it all happens. I mean, starters do that too. I've done that, but you kind of trust the whole game. Basically finishing up, because they did exactly what they needed to do. We had a couple miscues with the defense in that game, but nothing that you can, hang your head on as a pitcher. But you got Tony coming out with three slots. You got Vern coming out with almost 100. And then you've got Witten coming out with, basically cut fastballs, cutters that are virtually unhittable.
And Reifert, who hasn't given up a hit in the Arizona Fall League as of now.
You got Reif coming out with a slider that is, you don't see that. I think that's the one thing that with Reif is you don't see that out of any pitcher from big leagues all the way down. You see good sliders, you see sweep sliders, you see part cut sliders. His is a different breed of sliders.
Is that what makes him just so nasty? Because like I said, he went undrafted. He's been on the pod twice. Undrafted, he would have been drafted with non-COVID year and all that kind of stuff. But kind of under the radar. But he got traded for big leaguer, which is a flex to him. Being traded for, that's always, you can hang your hat on that. But like he's just been carving, and even in the Arizona Fall League, hasn't given up a hit yet. Although I told Tony he might have jinxed it, because he was telling me that when I was talking to him. So if he gives up a hit, you might need to find a new roommate. No big deal. But like, what makes him so nasty? It's just that slider, the uniqueness of it.
He can tunnel. Because he's only a two pitch guy. And I think he's working on a changeup. Mm-hmm. But because he's a two pitch guy, he tunnels everything out of one spot. Mm-hmm. And for him to throw the slider at the, throw it right at the mask, and then just have it break off, and then throw the fastball straight through that same point, it just looks totally different. And for him to be a reliever, you're only going to see maybe one or two innings, and then for the week you're probably going to see him for three or four innings. It's one of those you can't get in the box and go, okay, I'm ready for this, even though virtually you have a 50-50 shot of what's coming. and it just becomes unhittable.
That's insane. Like I said, he's good. Like, all of you guys are just nasty. So getting back to you, like, when did you realize you were kind of nasty in baseball? Like, growing up in high school and stuff, like, when did you realize, like, you know what, I could probably make something out of this?
So I was a pitcher catcher my freshman through junior year, predominantly catcher. I would catch bullpen varsity. You know, I'd catch in the bullpen on varsity games on Monday and Tuesday my freshman year.
Did you like catching better than pitching at that time?
I did, okay. Even though I couldn't hit. I could not hit to save my life. I mean, by the time I was a junior, I was catching our district games in high school, and I was getting DH'd for half the season.
Dang.
Yeah, it was one of those that, you know, we'd come in on a Monday, we'd throw our ace on Monday, I would catch it, and I'd get DH'd for because he was actually our first baseman too. And so when he got finished, he would just go to first base, and then it would bring me back into the game. But when he would play first base on Tuesday, we would throw our number two, number three arm, and he would be DH four, and I would have to hit, so I would just hit ninth. And so I realized at that point, like, hey, maybe I need to focus on pitching because I'm not going to be able to hit.
Yeah. So how fast were you throwing in high school?
Freshman to junior year I started out 81, 82. My junior year, I probably got up to maybe 85, 86. And then the fall going into my senior year, or the summer fall going into my senior year, I jumped from 86 to 93.
Wow. And what advice do you have for people trying to gain like velocity or throw harder? Cause that's the big thing now. Everybody wants to throw hard. Not everyone can throw hard, and some people, you know, excel at not throwing hard. But I mean, like, what advice do you have for people or maybe in high school or even in the minors now trying to just improve that velocity or even improve as a pitcher?
I think the one thing that really worked for me, and I still do a little bit of this now in the off season. This year will be my first year without doing it. I hit the weight room. I was a small kid. Like, my junior year, I barely hit 6 foot. It was not till my junior and senior year where I jumped up about 2, 3, 4 inches. And weight room is huge. I was skinny. So for me, I just ate anything and everything I could find. And I still do, within reason. I still eat anything and everything that's in sight and over time throughout the day. But just putting on weight, you know, I've never really gotten into driveline. I've never had, like, we've done different drills throughout high school and college. We would follow a little bit of driveline's program, but nothing that's straight out of driveline facility itself. But I got into a little bit of that and just doing velo drills throughout the week and understanding your arm and understanding your body and knowing that you don't need to overdo it. But you need to find that line and get to it every day.
No, for sure. For sure. So then when you started focusing on pitching as like in high school and stuff, is that kind of when you started realizing like, okay, I can get maybe go to college, maybe play the next level. Like when were you starting to get offers for college? And I think I started looking at that as a viable option.
The fall was my, this is the first camp and only camp that I went to. I went to where I actually went to school. I went to Lee University. Mm-hmm. So I went to a prospect camp at Lee University. And from that point on, I basically took a week. I got 5 phone calls or 6 from Lee University, Carson Newman, Bryan College, Columbia State, Cleveland State. And I believe if I'm not mistaken, I had a walk-on opportunity at Middle Tennessee State, and I believe Chattanooga State. So I had mostly smaller offers, and even at that point in the fall, my pitching coach, who, you know, him and my head coach are the two that I can thank for where I'm at today. Not only my pitching coach and head coach at Lee University, you know, Coach Brew, Coach Goodnow, both of them have fully developed me as a player and a person to get where I'm at. But the main starter for everything was my head coach, Coach Hensley and Trigg at my high school. And both of them pushed me to go to this camp and said, hey, you you're going to get a spot and you're going to get some opportunity. And that was when everything kind of opened up. And then even my senior year, having Rangers and Padres both come into games and having scouts there. And, and that was when I knew everything was kind of start settling in.
Yeah. Once you see the scouts from like major league clubs and stuff, you're like, all right, I might have a future in this.
Yes.
That's awesome. And like, let's talk about your college. Okay. So you go 20-5 with the 2.13 ERA. I think COVID year, you were 5-0 with a 0.21 ERA. Like, what was going right for you? Because obviously, like, you were one of the better pitchers in your school, in the area. Like, what was going right for you at that point?
Everything kind of started settling in. I started my freshman year when I was able to realize that opportunity was there. Going to scout day that we had every year at our field, we would go to scout day, and I would be the only freshman throwing on scout day. I would be the first or second guy my sophomore year throwing on scout day with seniors, with juniors and seniors who are eligible. I'm throwing and I have no eligibility of being drafted as a sophomore. And then junior year kind of rolls around. I'm like, okay, I've gotten forms to fill out. I've gotten interviews with scouts and meetings and all of these sorts of things, and everything kind of like settled in. I'm like, okay, you know, I need a good year. I need a great year, but this is my year. And so everything kind of started working out that way. And I just started settling in, going, I have a mindset knowing that there are guys that are good. There were guys that could absolutely rip baseballs in our conference. Not only on our team, but other teams that we played, there were guys that could absolutely rip the baseball. But in my mind, I looked at it going, okay, a humble way of saying that I am better than you. And I just used that mindset all the way through my junior year when everything kind of just started to click. I found the changeup, found the slider, fastball command started coming in. I'm sitting 3-7 through 7-8 innings, maybe even a complete game. I had one or two complete games my junior year. So I started sitting 3-7 and realizing, okay, if I can just dominate here, there's going to be a very good chance that I dominate in the next level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So those interviews and meetings with like the scouts and stuff, like the questionnaires and those kind of meetings, like what are those like? Like, I mean, because I've always been kind of curious. I wasn't a college player or anything like that, but I've always been kind of curious how, like, are there big differences between different like organizations and the questions they ask you, or is it all pretty generic, like just very generic based stuff?
Most of them are generic. Okay. I will say that they kind of like toned down some of them that I at least remember getting a few of my sophomore year. Just one or two going at the end of my sophomore year, going into my junior year, I started to get like one or two here or there, fill out. They were very, very basic. You know, have you had any surgeries? Have you, you know, what's medical history? What's it, the most well-known questions that you're going to get. But when you have those questionnaire interviews with scouts, at least at the start before COVID hit, I was having one-on-one interviews up in the press box at our field, or over lunch or over dinner, something of that nature, where they, you know, you're just going and sitting down. Obviously, they're not buying, they're not doing anything like that. They're making sure that they do it right, but you're sitting down having a conversation and they just want to know personal things about you. You know, do you live at home? Are you only child? Do you have a girlfriend? Do you have, do you work? Do you do anything like, you know, just those type of personal questions. So it was nothing that was too hard for me to answer. It was kind of like a job interview almost. Oh, like nice. They kind of asked, what's your weakness?
In a way it kind of is, you know,
it really is. So it was one of those, but I thought they were good. You know, it just depended on what team contacted you and how they wanted to do it. Some just did questionnaires and did no interviews. Some did short questionnaires and personal interviews.
Interesting.
It depended on the organization, how they wanted to do it.
Yeah. So getting back to your time at Rice and stuff, like, Lee University, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Your time at Lee University. What was maybe one team that you just love to face, maybe in conference or out of conference, that you just look back, you're like, man, I just shove against those guys, or maybe their fans are extra cocky and you just can't wait to put them in their place a little bit.
The one team that we always had, I would say we always had trouble with, or at least for 3 years, was University of West Georgia. I knew a few guys that went there, kind of got to know a few more of the guys as season went on. University of West Georgia was almost our kryptonite for my 4 years. They were a team that we went like 2-11 against. Oh, wow. 3-11. Yeah, it was one of those in my 3 or 4 years that, you know, that we played enough regular season games against them. Delta State was a team that was very well known in the Division II baseball. They're very well known. They're very good. They were a team that we always wanted to face, but at the end of the day, kind of struggled with. I would say on the cockier side, that was very, you know, they were good because they could back it up, but they were a little on the cocky side, was Valdosta State.
Okay.
They were very they were very aggressive, very pushy, very they tried to get under your skin.
A little chirpy.
And they were a little chirpy from the dugout, and for me I love that. I love the chirp, the fan chirp, the player chirp. You know, if you hit it, you know, if you're going to hit it, you hit a home run, you do something great, tip my cap. Next guy's not going to do it. But it fueled me even more every time I would just go through the lineup and just put one by one down, and they just kept coming. And then I just keep putting more and more down. You know, that was, for me, was satisfying.
Yeah. Do you chirp back? Like, are you guys somebody who would, cause like Tony, like he told me, like, he was like the Draymond Green when he was in college. Like, he was chirping everywhere. He's telling me that one of the coaches at Duke came out mid game and told him to like stop talking, cause he was chirping so much at Duke when he was playing them one time. Like, what kind of player were you? Would you chirp back at them, or were you just kind of like, I'm just gonna let my game do the talking for me?
No, I chirped back. I was very adamant. Now I kept it clean.
Yeah.
I tried everything possible to keep it clean and understanding baseball. I'm not gonna do anything and everything to just, you know, disgrace myself and my family by what I say. But I am gonna make sure that you know that I'm here, and nothing you say is going to bother me.
Nice. Like, what are some things that maybe they would say to you, or like some, what are the, maybe the best chirps where you hear it, you're like, oh man, I got to kind of respect that. That was kind of funny.
Most of it was just screaming, yelling, random things. I will say Valdosta State and Delta State both, you know, I appreciate them for this. So if any of them from those teams get to see this, I gained a few followers on Instagram because of it. So they actually like followed my Instagram or requested to follow me at the time. And, you know, I got more followers out of it, but they tried and use that a little bit and start yelling my username and all sorts of stuff like that from Twitter, Instagram. So they did that, but it was nothing that I personally looked at and was like, hey, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
But they was more of just screaming, yelling, and random phrases and words and stuff that they'd yell from the dugout. But
yeah,
I would turn around and say something back. Especially conference tournament. There was one that I did let Auburn Montgomery know a little bit. So I wouldn't say anything bad, but I would chirp back.
Yeah, usually maybe let them know that you're just going to start carving against them, maybe throw up a couple Ks.
Yes. Or keep them in the dugout the whole time.
Yeah.
And not allow them a chance to get going.
That's awesome. That's so cool. All right, so you get drafted seventh round by the Rays. How was draft day for you? Like, were you expected to go seven, or were you expected to go higher, maybe lower? What was kind of like your mentality going into the draft day?
We had looked at a few options of, you know, being told 3-5, 3-6, 3-7. I had hoped for, you know, a good 5-6 round jump, but I had a few calls in fifth and sixth round, but the money was not, you know, very good.
Yeah,
and I to me, it was just like, if I'm gonna get an option and get opportunity, I'm gonna get the most out of it. And there were a few that did not allow for that.
Yeah.
So I was holding out for good opportunities, good teams, and good chances to break through. And I get a call early in the seventh round from my agent at the time, and he lets me know that, hey, we're going, you know, this is what they want. This is what they're offering. Will you do it? And for me, I didn't even think twice. Like I heard, hey, this is who it is. It's the Rays. This is what they're offering you. Do you want it? And it's straight out of my mouth. Let's do it.
Yeah. Was it mostly because of the Rays? Like you just kind of knew the organization and they're like pitching, like pretty much pitching like facilities. Like they're very good at like developing and pitching. Was that kind of one of the reasons why you're like, all right, let's just roll with this. I like it.
Yeah. I mean, I knew that what they had to offer in the organization and how they develop pitchers and, you know, how they see pitching in their organization is a very, high standard mm-hmm. as to what they believe in winning a World Series. And, each year you see, pitcher after pitcher, if they don't make a 40-man roster, a big league roster mm-hmm. with the Rays, there's a very good chance they're going to make it with somebody else yeah. because they're so developed and every organization looks at it and goes, okay, we have good pitchers, but if we're going to get more pitchers that are just as good or better, we're going to go to the Rays system
right.
and try and trade and try and, you know, try and get those pitchers out. So for me, looking at it going, I'm going to develop and be the best pitcher I can possibly be in this organization. And whatever happens to the big league side is completely up to how they see fit.
Yeah. Can we just say, or I guess I should say thank you for not signing with the Yankees in 2020, because then I probably wouldn't have you on the pod. Like, I don't know if I don't think I've ever, like, I'm not a Yankee guy at all. But
they were very adamant on pushing and because they didn't get that first and I want to say first and second round pick in 2020 mm-hmm. because of the Garrett Cole trade. They were about to be very high up on the list of pulling the trigger in the 2020 draft. Even with five rounds, we were really pushed for the fifth round with them. But it worked out. We're here and we're in a great organization.
That's so. Did they call you during the draft and say we might draft you in the fifth round, or did you just find that like after when they were trying to sign you as an undrafted free agent?
It was a little bit of both. I had my agent talking to their scout and scouting director and cross checkers, making, you know, seeing what they're mm-hmm. hearing in the draft room. But I didn't get a single phone call or anything during the draft. And then the second the draft ended, towards later in the night, and then I think I got one or two text messages saying, "Hey, keep your phone on. We're gonna kind of move forward here and be ready." And come Monday morning, once the draft ended, because I think it was a Friday Saturday draft. First round was on Friday. Second through fifth round was on Saturday. I get a call Monday morning. I believe it like, or maybe it was a Monday or Sunday. This is Sunday or Monday morning at 9 o'clock. I've gotten six phone calls, and four of them are from the Yankees.
So they wanted you pretty bad then. They were trying to get you.
Yes. I think they were on that front that, you know, they didn't get me in the five rounds. Let's be the first ones to call and sign him on Sunday or Monday morning, whenever that happened. And I look back at it and I was just like, nothing against any organization and any team that called, but I just said, if you're not going to draft me, if you're not going to draft me this year, you're not going to get me this year.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back to school.
Yeah. And you kind of bet on yourself and it worked out. You get drafted by a division rival of the Yankees. So you can potentially pitch against the Yankees and let them know, maybe throw up five fingers for like the fifth round draft. Be like, look, you could have had me in the fifth, once you're shutting them out in like the potential like playoffs next season or two.
Yeah. Just look back at it and go, hey, you know, 21 or in 20, you had an opportunity and we're not here. But I have, you know, great respect for those scouts and cross checkers and scouting directors that the Yankees have. They're very adamant on what they try and push and try and get. But I have very, very much respect for what they did and how they pushed. And I thought, you know, if you're going to do it, you're going to try and get somebody, they're going to be the ones to try and do it, because they're going out of their way to try and get somebody at 9 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday or Monday morning, try and get them. So I have the utmost respect for how they did it. It's just, it didn't work out in their favor and how they were able to go through the draft.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can be very polite and respectful about it, but in 2-3 years from now, I might be holding up a poster with a sign saying you could have had him once you're pitching against them. We'll see. I'll have to bookmark this and maybe save this and play this in a couple of years down the future and just let them know that. I mean, they could have had you. They just had to try harder, but they didn't do it. So it's their loss. I want to talk about this. You play for the Savannah Bananas. How was that? That's like one of the coolest places, like the greatest show on earth or whatever for baseball wise. Like, how was that experience?
Yeah, it was fun. It was during COVID. So the way everything kind of worked out, we had very limited opportunities with fan interaction, even though we still kept that fan first motto that Jesse has always kept with the Bananas on how they do things. So our fan interaction was very limited to what we do, but we kept the yellow mentality, and we would have yellow Savannah Banana mask, and we would go out and sign stuff for people and go out and dance in the concourse outside the stadium after games. We would throw on yellow cleaning gloves and go out and be able to sign stuff and pictures. And we still kept that fan interaction and what we did, but I thought it was great what they were able to accomplish in a very limited opportunity. We had, I believe, six or seven teams that still offered to play in the Coastal Plain League at the time during COVID, where we would travel and go play and come home, go play, come home. I don't think there was a single game or games that we were able to or had to stay overnight, and we weren't going to be able to. So we would drive up, play, and drive back home. Where whether or not they allowed fans in their stadium, I think Lexington County was one of the teams that did not allow it. And I think they're right outside of Columbia, South Carolina. So they did not allow fans at games. And we were only allowed 50% capacity in stands. So even at a 7,000 capacity stadium, you still have 3,000 people coming to watch games.
That's more than some minor league stadiums.
Yes. And they would sell out. You did not, unless you were a player, unless you were on a player's list to get tickets, and they allowed we had 30 guys. So you had 60 tickets through players, 6,000 tickets through players. You did not get a ticket to that game unless somebody sold them to you. That's the only way that worked out. But it was fan first entertainment and interactions with fans were great, and how they accomplished what they have so far and what they will accomplish is great.
So did you learn how to did you have to practice like dances, choreograph? Cause they do all these crazy things. Like, what was maybe the one thing that you were like, okay, this is like kind of weird, but this is pretty cool just to be able to perform. Cause it is a performance really for these fans. Like, what was one thing that you're like, okay, this is pretty unique?
Some of the stuff that they do now, we did not do, like kind of the dancing on the field, and because we still played it as summer ball in the Coastal Plain League. So what they do now is completely full banana. Like, that's the best way I can describe it is full banana baseball. Like, how they play banana ball, the team that they play, the party animals, it's pretty much the same way. So how they play it and how they go about it is their way. So when we played it, we still kind of have followed, we still had to fully follow the game of baseball and how it's played. But we still got to, you know, in between innings, there's a time, I think it's third or fourth inning, they're doing, we had a choreographed dance to a certain song on how we play, you know, at the time of what the song was. And Shark, our DJ, was a guy who, you know, he would say, okay, hey, I'm going to play this song. Can you choreograph a dance? And so our first base coach, who was the dancing first base coach, he is a professional choreographed dancer. He knows exactly what you're doing when it comes to it. And so he would come to the game or come to the field. We would play a 7 o'clock game. We would be at the field by 2, stretch, ready to go at 3. We're doing, you know, throwing infield, something like that, by 3:30. If you are not in the starting 9, you're not first, second, or third out of the bullpen, you are one of 6-7 who are scheduled to do the choreographed dance for the day. And so you would be doing it during BP, of our BP, you would be doing a choreographed dance, practicing. And so then third, fourth inning rolls around. Hey, you're on this, you're dancing. Wow. We have two or three guys who are on, we would have like a ninth inning ring guy who would walk around with a big sign holding it up saying the ninth. So it would be like, kind of like what you see in UFC or boxing ring girls. It would be us doing that. We even have different things going on throughout the game. So there's not a dull moment in that game. Even if we lose, I mean, we don't want to lose, but if we lost, you would, you know, you still had fun. Fans mm-hmm. would stay till the end of the game because
no matter what,
they didn't want to miss.
Yeah, that's insane. That's like no matter what happens, the fans wouldn't leave because they just want to see like the whole like performance and production and experience. Even though they still play baseball and stuff back then, I mean they still kind of do now, but it's just obviously it's different the direction they're going now. But it's still incredible that you were able to get an experience and be part of something like that, like the Savannah Bananas. So let's kind of talk real quick about like your first year of pro ball. Like how was that for you? Like the experiences, cause you pitched really well, 6-3, 2.93 ERA. I'm not a stats guy, but like just looking at your numbers, you did pitch pretty well. You get the first start in the postseason. Like how was your overall first, you know, professional season?
It was good. There were some hiccups, along the way that I felt like were eventually going to happen midway through the season. It kind of, you know, you're pitching on a 5-day rotation, 6-day rotation, however it would play out. You have five starters and one starter would pitch twice in a week. So, excuse me. It was good. I felt like there was a lot of things that I was able to accomplish throughout the season of being able to say, okay, now I can go five innings. I may be able to go six. This is how hitters hit. You know, mm-hmm. this, you know, once you see a team once, they're going to know exactly how to hit you the second time.
Yeah.
And it's what you choose to do and how you approach the team that you're playing that you've already played 2 weeks ago. You know, you're going into Greenville playing a series and they've only seen you once and you play them. And then 2 weeks later, you're playing at home against Greenville who just saw you 2 weeks ago. So they know, you know, teams start realizing how to hit you and your tendencies. And then you start kind of seeing hitters' tendencies and, it was just fun to have, you know, I still having that experience of being able to play in Charleston and then come to Bowling Green, two different cities, two different atmospheres, both of which were great. You know, city wise things where you were able to go do and enjoy time out, away from baseball on both sides. And for me, I was closer to home, in Bowling Green. So I was able to kind of get away sometimes and just go home. I think there was one weekend where I was able to go because we had a 2-week homestand, played on Sunday and I ended up going home Sunday night, Monday off day, came back Tuesday morning and I was already back for Tuesday's game. Being 4 hours, it wasn't that difficult of a drive home and I know the route both ways. So it was just a great experience, an opportunity that I will take from this year and move forward into next year and how I approach not only where I go next year, whether it's back to Bowling Green to Montgomery or if it's to Montgomery or wherever I'm sent, traded, you know, however this season will play out, I will take this entire experience that I had and what opportunities that I had, and I will move forward and build off what I had this year.
Yeah, like I said, you pitched very well. So like obviously that mentality and that mindset was working for you. Like off the field, like how was maybe like did you ever go to any city? Because like minor league stadiums are kind of sometimes in the most random cities in the country, small towns and stuff like that. Like what was one city where you get off the bus, you look around, you're like, where am I? Like I'm in the middle of nowhere, and there's nothing here except maybe like a subway.
We were, when we went to Greensboro, our hotel was in kind of a, business complex, I mm-hmm. guess. So there was no gas station. There was no food. There was no shopping center, no mall, no nothing around us. It was only businesses. And so the only thing you were able to do is go to, you know, get on the bus and go on the food bus. at the time. And then if you needed to, you could Uber and DoorDash and stuff. So we spent a lot of money on DoorDash and Ubers to go, because that was the one place where you were, where they kept us, that you just go, there is not a single thing here. There's not a single thing to do. And I think Asheville was a little bit like that. We had, you know, a nice hotel. They had a restaurant in the hotel, but the only two things within an okay walking distance were a Zaxby's and a McDonald's. So if you want anything else, you had to walk about a mile or two down the road or DoorDash.
Have you ever pitched? I was talking to Evan. Actually, this is back when he was playing with the Brewers. And I can't remember the stadium, but the hotel was like this multicolored, polka dotted, Mother Earth, like
that's in Kinston.
Yes,
that's down east. No, so when I was in Charleston, the only two fields that I got to play at were the Red Sox low A in Salem, Virginia, and then the Nationals low A in Fredericksburg,
gotcha.
Virginia.
Okay. You missed out. Cause I mean, that's an experience from what I've been told.
Yeah. Yes. I've talked to Witten and Vern, yeah, and Tony, that place is brutal, to say the least. They did not have a good experience, nor did they enjoy any of that trip. But yeah, no, the only two that I got to go to, and I ended up getting called up to high A.
Yeah, because you got called up pretty quickly, actually, now that I think about it, because you only pitched a couple of games, like 20-something innings, I feel like, I think I was looking at, and you were just like carving, like below one ERA, so they obviously moved you up pretty quickly and stuff like that. So good for you for getting to avoid that. Was there any, like, do you have any interesting, like, fan interactions? Because I've had guys tell me, like, fans have asked them to sign their foreheads. Fans have jumped on the bus trying to take pictures of them after the games. And, you know, security had to, like, kick them off the bus and stuff like that. Have you had any interesting funny fan interactions?
I've had a few. There's one that it was not directly happened to me, but I was sitting at a signing table in Bowling Green where they'll take two or three guys who had either pitched or played the night before, and they'll put them out at a table in the concourse right there by the gate, and they'll do signings.
Okay.
And I'm sitting down, and it's me, Sean Mullen, out of UCLA, and I do not remember who our third guy was. I want to say it was Anthony Molina, but I could be wrong on that. And we're sitting there, and I'm at the end of the table, or I'm in the middle of the table. So I've got I think I've got Molina to my left, and I've got Mullen to my right. And this kid comes up, and it was him and a few of his friends. They get the sign from Molina. They come to me, they get my sign. They look at Sean Mullen and go, "Can you sign this as Bryce Harper?" And he goes, "What do you mean?" And he was like, "No, can you just sign it Bryce Harper?" And he was like, "Sure." And just puts up just a random signature on the box of whatever he was having to sign, just puts up a random signature, and then puts down, he even put down Harper's number. He just put down a random number, and he kind of held it. And he goes, "Hey, what's Bryce Harper's number?" And he goes, 11. And the kid and Sean just looked at him and go, "Yes, there you go," and handed it off to him. And he said, "That's not even his number." And I don't even remember what Bryce Harper's, like, his number is in Philadelphia, but he was just like, "Here you go." And he was like, he didn't even ask for his signature. Like, he didn't even ask for Sean's signature. He just asked him to sign it as Bryce Harper.
I don't know, Sean, does he look like Bryce Harper at all? Like, is there any resemblance?
No, it was that was the thing. There was no, I mean, maybe a little bit in, like, kind of how he has, like, a little bit of.
But he didn't even ask for a picture, because if you ask for a picture, then maybe you can be like, okay, that was Bryce Harper, you know, a lookalike. But he didn't ask for a picture. Yeah. He just wanted an autograph for some random thing.
Yes, just I think it was a box of bobblehead nights, and he said, "Here, sign. Can you sign this as Bryce Harper?" And Sean just kind of looked at me, and he goes, "Okay," and signed it and handed it to the kid. And I looked at him and I said, "Did you actually sign it?" He goes, "No, I just wrote a bunch of scriggles, but I put BH and then just a bunch of random squiggles on it." And so, and they just put a random number down and asked the kid. But it was like, I looked at the kid after he said it, and I kind of looked at Sean, And he's a guy that's just kind of happy go lucky, yeah. And he's just gonna he'll go with the flow and just have fun with the fans and how they go about things. But he just kind of did it. He was just like, okay, sure. I think that's the one weird one that I've looked at and it was like, that's not right. I've had a few where fans will actually like sit outside of the stadium when we're walking out or sit close to, for us, we have to go into left center to go to our clubhouse after games, BP, whatever. Our clubhouse is through left center field. And some fans will sit up there and they'll kind of like, look down and they'll go, Hey, can you sign a ball? I mean, sure. Had one guy on our team and he kind of looked up and this is after Greenville and he's sitting out with this big, binder full of baseball cards. And goodness. He goes, Hey, can you sign a baseball card for me? And he goes, yeah, sure. What's my name?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, if you're going to, you know, you're going to ask the guy, at least, you know, kind of have a recognition. He goes, Kyle Manzardo. And this guy, I mean, this guy's 6'8". Like he's tall. He goes, Kyle Manzardo. He goes, nope, try again. Mason Hour. He goes, nope, that's not it. You're not good enough. I'm gonna get
it. Was it Austin Vernon?
Oh, can I? No, it was Ben Breck.
Okay.
And he asked him, he's like, hey, what, you know, you this, and he looks nothing like either one of Manzardo or Mason Hour. Like no resemblance. He has darker hair than either one of them, very short, kind of cut faded a little bit, and he looks nothing like them. And the guy was just throwing out names to try and get him to sign the book, and he wouldn't do it. He's like, I'm not gonna break, I'm just gonna get on the bus, because the guy has no idea who I am.
Yeah, and that's how it is a lot of times. Like that story is like, I hear that all the time where people are like, you know, what's my name? I don't know. Well, then I'm not gonna sign it. One guy told me that he's a darker complexion and someone thought he was Fernando Tatis. And he's like, no, I'm not. Like, I you don't even know who I am. You don't even know my name. Like, I'm not going to sign your, like, autographs. Austin Vernon actually told me that. I don't know where it was, but someone had asked him to sign a blank index card. And he's like, I'm not going to sign a blank index card and have you just, like, rip my signature and, like, or use it to forge it. Because it was literally just, like, a blank card. Like, you know, just sign this card and that's it. Like, he's like, yeah, it's kind of suspicious. People were trying to ask for a blank card to sign an autograph and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, he's like, you don't want to like risk that. And yeah. Oh, I think I know where he was talking about. That was in Asheville. People would stood outside of the gates waiting on our bus to pull in, and they just started handing out like blank index cards. I was so like, weird. Hey, can you sign this? I'm like, I did it, and I just squiggled a bunch of things. Like you can't even tell that it's my signature.
Yeah, Bryce Harper. I just BH.
Yeah, let me just put BH on there with, you know, number 75 on there, and you'll have no idea.
That's crazy. Wow. So off-season-wise, like, obviously, you know, you were on vacation and stuff like that. Like, what's the plan? Like, when you start ramping things up and like that, like, what are you going to do are you a golfer? Like, what are you doing in your off-season?
Yeah, I'll play a lot of golf. Actually, the new Call of Duty dropped last night, so yeah. I've been playing that all morning. I played it at midnight till 1 and I was just like, I can't play anymore. So I've been playing that and I'll probably go back here in a little while and jump back on and play a little bit more. So that one dropped. So I've been playing a lot of that. Golf has been very high up, but, I will start, on Monday when I get back. I fly back on Sunday and on Monday I will start, complete workouts and, I believe probably later into the week, I'll start moving my arm a little bit and start doing a little more throwing. But I want to get a little bit into the gym more than I already have been. I've been going once or twice a week just to kind of stay in that rhythm. But now that I'll be doing it 5 days a week, I kind of want to get into the rhythm a little bit more before I start picking up a baseball and start moving that. So I'll probably start moving that probably later into next week or the week after. And start filling that out, but I'll start ramping things up here shortly.
Yeah. And let's actually end on this. I was going to ask you this earlier. I totally forgot about this. My crazy brain, in the postseason, after you guys were pitching and stuff like that, and you won the championship, congrats to you guys. Do you guys get a ring? Like, do you know what's going on with that?
Yeah. So we ended up getting back. So we actually threw a very small short celebration after the game, in their, or our cages, because they, the way Aberdeen had set up, their clubhouse was down right field line. Our clubhouse was down left field line. And there was a cage back behind our clubhouse. So, you know, they can go in and hit and do anything like that. And we threw a celebration in there. We got on the bus, left at, I believe, midnight, got back at around 11:30. And the second that we walked in, there's a chart that has everybody's name on it. And there's a rings, like just a set of rings on a key ring. And so all you did was take it off, put it on, see if that fit. No, let me do another one. And then you just write down your ring size, and it's supposed to come in towards spring training when we get back.
That's so cool. Who got after it the most in your guys' celebration?
I don't know if I want to throw anybody under the bus. I think everybody got pretty good. I've been around Vern a lot, and I've seen him when he's very light and opened up, and I don't think anybody got too bad. I don't think anybody got like, Tom Brady did on after the Super Bowl, but I would say that a lot of people got, really, really good, and we were like, well, we got a bus ride, so
I heard that bus ride sucked.
The worst it's gonna do is put us to sleep. Yeah. So you just make sure that you were in the right spot and make sure, you weren't going to get car sick. Cause all right, well, I've got some champagne, I've got some beer. I mean, I need to tone it down a little bit. Cause this car ride's still long and there's no way of getting off, and you don't want to go to the bathroom and do it. Cause it's just going to stay in there all night. I think everybody felt good, felt great afterwards. They just knew that we had a long bus ride. So it's either go hard and make sure you can hold it in, or, enjoy yourself and relax for the rest of the bus ride.
That's awesome. Well, hey, Logan, I want to thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. This is a great opportunity. Appreciate it so much.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.